All right, we're in Jeremiah. We are over in Jeremiah chapter 9. Jeremiah chapter 9. Find a convenient place to start here. Let's go down to verse 3. We'll start. I realize we got just a little past this, but it's not far. Not to avoid context here. Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 3, all right? They bend their tongues like their bow for lies, but they are not valiant for the truth upon the earth. For they proceed from evil to evil, and they know not me, saith the Lord. Take ye heed every one of his neighbor, and trust ye not in any brother, for every brother will utterly supplant, and every neighbor will walk with slanders. Think about a day when the entire country is under the judgment of God. Think about a day when everybody's out completely for their own selves. We haven't seen a day like this in America yet. There'll be a day in the future. This is prophetic in part. Imagine where if somebody doesn't take the mark of the beast, they're going to starve to death. And so it's all about me. Verse 5, and they will deceive everyone his neighbor, will not speak the truth. They have taught their tongue to speak lies and weary themselves to commit iniquity. People say, well, I'm tired. Well, maybe you should do something productive. It says there that somebody spends their time, they weary themselves to commit iniquity. Verse 6, thine habitation. They say that one of the things, the Republican convention's in town and all that stuff. And that, news coverage finally goes off at 10 o'clock or whatever, and then the parties start. The parties go into wee hours of the morning. This is to elect a new president. That's something. Verse 6. Thine habitation is in the midst of deceit. Through deceit, they refuse to know me, saith the Lord. We talked about that last time. Verse 7. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, behold, I will melt them and try them. For how shall I do for the daughter of my people? Now we'll pick up where we left off last time. Verse 8. Their tongue is as an arrow shot out. It said here earlier that they bent their tongue like a bow for lies. Well, here it is shot out as an arrow. It speaketh deceit. One speaketh peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in heart he layeth his weight. So he's lying in wait. Look in Proverbs chapter 26, Proverbs 26. And folks, it's one of the more straightforward, should be one of the first things that we, deal with when, we get saved. Granted, if the Lord dealt with you first about your cigarettes or about this or that or the other, well good and fine. But did he deal with you about your tongue? It's all one of the first things that should change. It's one of the least invasive things. At least, if you smoke cigarettes for 15 years, well, you got a nicotine addiction. You got to overcome that. If you had, wretched habits, immoral habits, then, it's going to take quite a bout to overcome that. When it gets down to it, the words that come out of your mouth, that ought to be one of the easier things to change. Only one of the things that changes more quickly. And part of that is what? Part of it's honesty. Look in Proverbs chapter 26, go down to verse 28. And remember what we are saying here. It said back in Jeremiah, their tongue is an arrow shot out, it speaketh deceit. One speaketh peaceably to his neighbor with his mouth, but in heart he layeth his weight. He's lying in wait. Proverbs 26, and go down to verse 28, a lying tongue hateth those that are afflicted by it, and a flattering mouth worketh ruin. Barack Obama hates us. I'm not sure that any of the rest of them don't. But a lot of them would get up and say, anything that it takes to get what they want. And there are people, and you know, that is a national catastrophe. And then down on an individual basis, it happens all the time. It happens absolutely all the time. You better be careful what you listen to with people telling you stuff. Now go to another place here. Look in Proverbs 29, just a few verses down, a couple pages over. Proverbs 29, verse 5. Proverbs 29, 5. The Bible warns about a smooth mouth and a flattering tongue. Somebody that's always, you know, telling you how pretty you are, or you know, how this, that, or the other. A compliment is an encouragement, and that's a blessing. But somebody that's always laying it on thick, what are you after? Right? Right? Proverbs 29:5. A man that flattereth his neighbor spreadeth a net for his feet. Look down in Isaiah chapter 30, just a few more pages over. Isaiah 30, you'll recognize this verse. You know, folks, the day that God's people start not wanting to hear the truth about themselves is the day that things get shot through pretty bad. And we've come to a day where everyone has itching ears, that they want teachers to come tickle. They come to church wanting to hear certain things. It's a dangerous proposition. Isaiah 30, and go down to verse 10. Verse 9. This is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of the Lord, which say to the seers, see not, and to the prophets, prophesy not unto us right things. Speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits. Boy, folks, there's a lot in there. You know that? To the seers don't see, and to the prophets don't prophesy to us right things. We don't want to hear what's right. We want to hear what's smooth. Once in a while, about once a month, somebody comes off a visitation or off street preaching, door to door or whatever, and you know, somebody has said to them that day, you know, I don't want to hear what the Bible says. I want to hear what you think. And at least they're honest. You know, I appreciate that side of it, but that's what this is. Look down to verse 11. Get you out of the way. Turn aside out of the path, cause the Holy One of Israel to cease from before us. And that's what's happening, folks. Look in, let's go all the way over to Ephesians chapter 4 real quick, and then we'll move on. In Ephesians 4, I'm keying on the words there in Jeremiah chapter 9, where it says that in heart this guy layeth his weight, that is, W-A-I-T, layeth his ways, laying in wait, lying in wait. Look in Ephesians chapter 4 and down in verse 14. You know what the answer to all that is, folks? Grow up. All right? Young woman, if you think that everything that some black-headed guy says to you that's sweet and good is true, you need to grow up. Because it ain't. It's not right. Okay? Nobody is as good as he says you are. All right? And, you know, folks, when folks start doing that, like I said, I appreciate, you know, people say things to me occasionally that are very encouraging. Maybe we need to, you know, I'm certain that there's plenty of preaching. We need to encourage one another more. I'm not trying to discourage that. But with the flattering lips, you have to be careful with that stuff. With folks feeding you stuff, they're trying to make you disenchanted in one part of your life where you shouldn't be disenchanted, and then they're going to take you to, you know, take you somewhere else, and then they're going to ravage you. They're not going to deliver you to you what you think they're going to deliver to you. You're going to go away disappointed. You're going to go away wounded. Like Brother Mark says the other night, you know, sometimes you don't get to go back to the Y on the road either. Okay? That's one of the great lessons in life. Is just because you're young, for one, doesn't mean that you always get to go back and start over. Boy, I made a mistake. I'll just back up, put her in reverse, go back to the Y on the road, go down the other fork. It doesn't happen that way a lot of times, folks. So you don't want to make some, there's mistakes you do not want to make, especially if you have forewarning. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 14. That we henceforth be no more children. Okay, grow up. Tossed to and fro. Carried about with every wind of doctrine by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness whereby they lie in wait to deceive. It says they are lying in wait. That's what it said back here in Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 8. It says, in heart he layeth his wait. Right, verse 9. I shall not visit them for these things. Or rather, shall I not visit them for these things? It's a question. In other words, God is going to go out on visitation. He says, I'm going to visit them. This kind of visitation is not the visitation that Jesus Christ offered when he came to die for our sins. They knew not the time of their visitation, Christ said. This is a visitation of judgment. Verse 9, shall I not visit them for these things, saith the Lord? Shall not my soul be avenged on such a nation as this? Verse 10, for the mountains will I take up a weeping and wailing, and for the habitations of the wilderness a lamentation, because they are burned up, so that none can pass through them. Neither can men hear the voice of the cattle. Both the fowl of the heavens and the beasts are fled. They are gone. God judges a land. A lot of the time its ecology is shot. Okay? We talk about, they talk about pollution now, but they have, it's the whole environmental thing. When I remember, is anybody old enough to remember watching TV in the 70s and you had the old Indian? And somebody, you'd see a Coke can or a beer can or something, thrown out of a car, and then it rolls to the feet of the Indian, and the Indian's sitting there in full Indian dress, American Indian, not dot Indian, American Indian, and, whizzing cheeks and tears running down his cheeks. Pollution, Now, folks, the Bible says that what pollutes a land is wickedness. That's what pollutes a land. It's not, I'm not for dumping sewage in the river, not for, throwing, nuclear waste into the cornfield. But beer cans are not the worst thing. Okay? Not sure you're convinced. Okay, all right. Look in Psalm 106 then. Fine. Give me Bible. Psalm 106, if you insist. Psalm 106. Psalm 106, verse 37, Psalm 106, 37. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto devils, shed innocent blood, even the blood of their sons and of their daughters, whom they sacrificed unto the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. Land's polluted by idolatry. Land's polluted by false worship. Land's polluted by wickedness and adultery and idolatry. Granted, nobody wants to live, in a nuclear waste dump, but that's not the worst thing there is. Look in Jeremiah 3 real quick, just again, Jeremiah 3. Jeremiah 3, verse 1. They say, if a man put away his wife, she go from him, become another man, shall he return unto her again? Shall not that land be greatly polluted? Now, there's a lot more to that doctrine than just that verse, but keep reading. But thou hast played the harlot with many lovers, yet return again to me, saith the Lord. Lift up thine eyes into the high places, see where thou hast not been lain with. In the ways hast thou sat for them as the Arabian in the wilderness. Thou hast polluted the land with thy whoredoms, with thy wickedness. Once in a while you hear some nutcase get up and say God's going to judge us for having landfills full of Pampers. That ain't the half of it. All right, back to Jeremiah chapter 11. Jeremiah 9:11. And I will make Jerusalem heaps, just a pile of rocks, and a den of dragons. And you can go look up, where the dragons dwell, and where he's always talking about dens of dragons, where a lot of times he's talking about, owls hanging out and certain birds of the air and satyrs and all those weird animals that we're not sure what those are and all that kind of stuff. It always talks about God judging a land. Sometimes it's Edom, sometimes it's Jerusalem, sometimes it's Babylon. And they become desolate, and they become dens of dragons. And what I believe is that they're haunted. Well, that's what I believe. I believe that that you know, when God judges a place, and the spirits of godly people and so on basically go away, there's a vacuum created. And I don't know if you've ever walked down through a part of a town somewhere that's been pretty much boarded up and deserted. There's a spirit about the place. It's kind of weird. I mean, you can go down to North Minneapolis right now. I wouldn't suggest right now, actually. Walk down through there, you know, past some boarded up buildings and stuff, and there's a different spirit down there than at Riverdale. You know? I believe that. That's what I believe. I believe that there's different spirits that come in there and dwell in there. I think those dragons and those satyrs and those owls and that sort of stuff, I think those are demons. Anyway, back to verse 11. I will make Jerusalem heaps and a den of dragons. And I will make the cities of Judah desolate. You always find that desolation around the dwelling of the dragons, dens of dragons, and so on and so forth, without an inhabitant. Verse 12. Who is the wise man that may understand this? And who is he to whom the mouth of the Lord hath spoken, that he may declare it? For what the land perisheth, and is burned up like a wilderness, that none passeth through? People stand around and say, why, oh, why? Why is God doing this? Why, oh, why, oh, why? Well, that's what he says. Isn't there a wise man around that understands it? And there's somebody that I've spoken to that can declare for what the land perisheth? And folks, it's come a day where there's not many folks around that seem to be able to figure that out. I don't know exactly what happened, but I don't know if you noticed or not, but one hurricane just hit west of New Orleans. There's another one crawling up the coast of Florida now, and two more following up out in the Atlantic. Two more. There's one behind Ike. Say, what is that? I don't know. The Democrats just elected a guy named Hussein as a presidential candidate. It's wild, isn't it? Verse 13, and the Lord saith, because they have forsaken my law, which I have set before them, and have not obeyed my voice, neither walked therein, but have walked after the imagination of their own heart and after Balaam. And look at that sequence there. Verse 14, forsook my law, and then they walked after the imagination of their own heart, one, and after Balaam. Balaam is the plural for Baal, okay? Multiple Baals. Baal is sometimes a singular, specific god by name. Sometimes it's intended to be a generic name for heathen god, and then Balaam is plural. B-A-A-L-I-M. It's plural gods, all right? So he says they've done two things. They've walked after the imagination of their own heart and after Balaam. Folks, when you start following your own imagination and your own heart, you always wind up in idolatry. It's unavoidable. You just do. Verse 14, which their fathers taught them. Verse 15, therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I will feed them, even this people, with wormwood, and give them a water of gall to drink. You read about the wormwood over in Revelation chapter 8. There's a star that fell, and all the waters on earth were turned to wormwood. That's a prophecy that for that part. But when you have, everybody drinks pop and soda and everything else these days, and I did too. The folks, when the water turns bitter so that you can't stand to drink a glass of water, you're in trouble then, right? But the waters turned to wormwood, and that gave them water of gall to drink. They gave Jesus Christ a vinegar mixed with gall. Gall is a plant. And what the stuff that comes out of it is bitter. And Jesus Christ tasted it and wouldn't drink anymore. Verse 16. I will scatter them also among the heathen, whom neither they nor their fathers have known. And I will send a sword after them till I have consumed them. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider ye and call for the mourning women, that they may come, and send for cunning women, that they may come. Remember, Jesus Christ shows up to the centurion's house. His daughter has died, and their people are already there, the basically professional people that are leading the mournful songs and all. I mean, it's a big setup where it's almost a kind of a staged mourning. But they bring in, you know, people who, you know, they have song leaders in church and they have mourning leaders, I guess, you know. But that's what it's saying. Bring in cunning women and call for the mourning women to come and mourn, because there's a lot to mourn. Verse 18. And let them make haste and take up a wailing for us, that our eyes may run down with tears and our eyelids gush out with waters. For a voice of wailing is heard out of Zion. How are we spoiled? We are greatly confounded, because we have forsaken the land, because our dwelling have cast us out. The Lord always told them. He said, if you go back to what the heathen did in this land, the land is going to cast you out like it cast them out. Of course, the Lord's behind some of that too, but it's what they were saying. They said that the land's going to cast you out. Verse 20. Yet hear the word of the Lord, O ye women, and let your ear receive the word of his mouth, and teach your daughters wailing, and everyone her neighbor lamentation. For death is come up into our windows, and is entered into our palaces, to cut off the children from without, and the young men from the streets. Speak, thus saith the Lord, even the carcasses of men shall fall as dung upon the open field, and as the handful after the harvestmen, and none shall gather them. And that's happened various times in history, where so many people die from one thing or another, pestilence, bubonic plague, black death, war, whatever else, that there's just no way to bury them all. There's just not that many people there. Verse 23, thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might, let not the rich man glory in his riches. And folks, you know, a wise man's wisdom is what he glories in. And a rich man's riches is what he glories in. And everybody knows what Arnold Schwarzenegger gloried in 20 years ago. Right? That's the way we are. He says, don't do that. Verse 24, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord which exercise loving kindness, judgment and righteousness in the earth, for in these things I delight, saith the Lord. I mean, folks, you stop and consider what Paul did. What Paul did was a remarkable thing. There are very few things in this life that are quite so much a trap as wisdom and accomplishment in wisdom and knowledge. And folks, I mean, Paul was climbing a ladder. He was the rising star amongst the Pharisees, and being entrusted with persecuting these Christians and stuff. I mean, he says, I counted that stuff but dung. I mean, when Christ. And we've forgotten those lessons. And sometimes, you know, we Christians, we forget those lessons too. There's many a preacher, many a professor in Christian colleges that are still, you know, in the midst of, elevating their own accomplishments, you know, their own power, the size of their ministries, that sort of thing. It's the wrong thing. When you get away from being honored that you can know and understand God, you've messed up when you get away from that. And he says, they glory in wisdom, might, and riches. What they need to glory in is in understanding, knowing me, that I'm the Lord, which exercise three things, loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness. Loving kindness, judgment. They glory in wisdom, riches, and might. The Lord traffics in loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness. Those things don't go together very well. Back to verse 25. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will punish all them which are circumcised with the uncircumcised. Egypt and Judah, Egypt not circumcised. Edom, Edom not circumcised. The children of Ammon, not circumcised. And Moab, and all that are in the utmost corners that dwell in the wilderness, for all these nations are uncircumcised, and all the house of Israel are uncircumcised in heart. So even then the Lord acknowledges that everything can be right on the outside and not right at all on the inside. And he'll only go so far, has only gone so far, will only go so far in recognizing things that are just right outwardly. 10:1. Hear ye the word which the Lord speaketh unto you, O house of Israel. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen. Be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. Okay, let's get this straight. We're not supposed to be like them, right? We're not supposed to be dismayed by the things they are dismayed by. We are not to learn their ways. You know what? I mean, we're all Americans here, and so we basically all kind of live alike up to a certain point. But there's got to be a difference. Now, it says here, learn not the way of the heathen. What's it mean? Well, Leviticus chapter 20. Leviticus 20, and it gets real bad in some cases. Leviticus 20. Leviticus 20. And go down to verse 22. Leviticus 20, 22. Ye shall therefore keep all my statutes and all my judgments and do them, that the land whither I bring you to dwell therein spew you not out. That was, we talked about that. Ye shall not walk in the manners, notice here it's manners, but in the manners of the nation. We say, you know, what's your manners? We're thinking about, you know, don't burp out loud. You know, don't be socially gross. But the manners go a lot deeper than that in the Bible. Verse 23, you shall not walk in the manners of the nation which I cast out before you, for they committed all these things, and therefore I abhorred them. And if you want to go back up through that passage, verse 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, adultery, sodomy, bestiality, bad manners, all right? Hey, folks, evil communications corrupt good manners. Okay, and that's the manners you're talking about. Not talking about, you know, if you hang around with those people, you're going to start burping out loud. That's not what it's talking about. If you start listening to the DNC for very long, and you're going to wind up voting for a queer. You'll start thinking it's all right. Okay, you'll start adopting some things. And it's wrong. Look at something else here in Jeremiah. Well, no, don't go to Jeremiah. Deuteronomy chapter 12. We're talking about learn not the way of the heathen. All right? Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 12. Deuteronomy 12. And go down to verse 29, Deuteronomy 12, 29. When the Lord thy God shall cut off the nations from before thee, whither thou goest to possess them, thou succeedest them and dwellest in their land, take heed to thyself that thou be not snared by following them after that they be destroyed from before thee, and that thou inquire not after their gods, saying, how do these nations serve their gods? Even so will I do likewise. All right? I mean, there's a certain amount to know about, you know, so you can recognize Satanism if you see it, or recognize a gross heresy if you see it. But then, you don't need to go study it at great depth. You don't need to go find out what the gay culture is really like. You don't need to do that. You need to be simple concerning those things. Wise concerning that which is good, simple concerning that which is evil. Right? learn not the ways of the way of the heathen. Back to Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 2. You know, they're having all this trouble down in St. Paul, I guess. We were talking about going down there and passing out tracts and stuff. I don't know that it's the thing to do now. They had 280-something anarchists arrested down there the other night, and then 10 or 12 more yesterday, and God knows what's going on down there. And people are down there facing off with police over nothing. Okay? Anarchists. Anarchists. What a mess. Anyway, Jeremiah chapter 10, verse 2. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen. Be not dismayed at the signs of heaven. Now, we're talking about astrology there. You know, people looking up in the sky and, you know, finding signs and so on. Even Nebuchadnezzar fell for that stuff, the astrologers and stargazers. You need not go for that stuff, folks. Verse 2, for the heathen are dismayed at them. We ought not be dismayed at what the heathen are dismayed by. That's a kind of a good rule to live by. If you're greatly upset by what the heathen are upset by, you need to rethink that. All right? Kind of gets close sometimes, though. I mean, it kind of gets, you have to exercise some discretion. Here's Katrina that goes through New Orleans 3 years ago, right? And there are Christians involved in that. But do I feel like the average ABC guy about the destruction of, or partial destruction then of New Orleans? I have to be honest with you. I really don't. Right? Back to verse 2. You're not supposed to be dismayed at the same thing the heathen are dismayed by. You're not supposed to be happy at the same thing the heathen are happy about. You know, I can get a little bit of a kick out of, out of the Twins winning the World Series or something like that. But it doesn't last for long. You know, it's a superficial, it's one of those things. I believe there's a line that has to be drawn with your entertainment and stuff. And can a Christian go to a ball game and still be a Christian? Well, yeah. You better be careful with the cheerleaders and the rock and roll and getting off in it. Do I think that ought to habitually take you out of church? You better watch out. Right? Right? Everybody, takes a vacation once in a while, winds up in a spot sometimes, someplace where there's not a decent church to go to. Well, I got news for you. When we go on vacation, there's not a church around. I don't go find a charismatic church to go to just so I can say, well, what's going on in church? I don't. All right. But you don't want that to become a habit. Right? You should not be dismayed by what the heathen are dismayed by. You should not be made happy by what the heathen are made happy by. Verse 3. For the customs of the people are vain. The customs of the people. Look at what it calls a custom. Look in Leviticus chapter 18 real quick. Leviticus chapter 18. Verse 29, again in another chapter of abominations. Leviticus 18:29. For whosoever shall commit any of these abominations, even the souls that commit them, shall be cut off from among their people. Therefore shall ye keep mine ordinance, that ye commit not any one of these abominable customs which are committed before you, and that ye defile not yourselves therein. I am the Lord your God. Okay? Got to be careful for the customs. It's just the way that the heathen live. I don't understand, folks. I don't understand getting so caught up in, I don't understand people caught up in fads. I don't understand people caught up in fashion. Now, I'm a guy. Although there's a bunch of guys now caught up in fashion. There's guys wearing makeup now. There's guy makeup now. It's so important that they're, a guy that's running around all the time worrying about the texture on my skin's dry. I think something's weird with that thing. I mean, you know, if you need to, if your skin's dry, then go borrow some of your wife's hand lotion. Be done with it. Go sneak it or something. But don't run around with a makeup kit. I just don't understand. And guys that are, you know, I don't understand men who can't get by with Walmart jeans. Why is it important to have a $50 pair of jeans? Right? That goes for ladies too, but guys that do this are particular sissies. There's just something particularly strange and weird about a guy who has to have a $50 shirt, you know, because, you know, the ones from Walmart, they just don't fit me right. This is weird. I don't understand. Like I said, makeup, the guys, the appearance thing where you really have enough time and money to worry about whether your hair's falling out. I mean, really? I just cut it off short. You look fine. You do. And ladies, I mean, I understand. I believe that there's a little more latitude with it for ladies. But to be carried away with fashion is, you're toying with a boundary that is wasteful and useless. And I don't denigrate anybody that wants to get beyond, you know, jean skirts necessarily or something like that. You don't have to look rustic. But, you know, to follow that fashion down the pike and to be checking what's coming out, you know, from Gay Paris, there's something wrong with that, folks. If you're that tied in, if you are that tied in to the world's fads and fashions, you're begging for trouble. You're flirting with disaster. You're not called to be tied into that stuff. Back to verse 3. For the customs of the people are vain. Now here it's talking about idolatry, openly, because notice, for one cut of the tree out of the forest, the work of the hands of the workman with an axe, they deck it with silver and with gold, they fasten it with nails and with hammers, that it move not. Of course, this is a Christmas tree. Yeah, okay, that's fine, but it's not primarily a Christmas tree. You understand that? If you want to write Christmas tree in your margin there, you can do that if you want to. But this is an idol, okay? This is not just an upstanding, you know, upright tree. This is something that they cut down the stock of a tree, and then they plate it with gold and silver and fasten it. I mean, it's an idol, okay? Verse 4. They deck it with silver and with gold. They fasten it with nails and with hammers that it move not. They are upright as the palm tree, but speak not. This God, that's what a man. It's not just a ornament. It's not just a decoration. It's a God. They must needs be born, carried, because they cannot go. Aren't you glad you got the God that you got? He can speak. He can go on his own. He's not a paraplegic. Verse 5, be not afraid of them, for they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. So let's get this straight. Some little teraphim or some little, you know, idol thing, it's not going to do you good or bad. There is no such thing as a good luck charm, and there's no such thing as a bad luck charm. And if a black cat crosses your path, kick it. Those things don't do good and they don't do evil. That's superstition. Okay, it's witchcraft. You open up yourself to it, then the devil may come jump in it and use it to do good or do evil because you're honoring it. Otherwise, serving God, you don't have any business being scared of that stuff or honoring that stuff. Verse 6, superstition. Verse 6, for as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, thou art great, and thy name is great in might. Now, wait a minute. We didn't quite get the sense there because I stopped to comment at the end of verse 5. But the end of verse 5 is followed by the beginning of the next sentence in verse 6. All that in verse 5, be not afraid of them, For they cannot do evil, neither also is it in them to do good. For as much as there is none like unto thee, O Lord, right? Thou art great, and thy name is great in might. It's his name that's of concern, and Dagon's name doesn't mean anything. Verse 7. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain. I mean, the question is not who would not fear thee, O King of nations? It's, who wouldn't fear you? I mean, really, that's the timbre of the question. Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? He says, for to thee doth it appertain. What doth appertain? Fear. He's the only God to fear. He's the King of nations. He's the King of the universe. He created it. Fear appertains to him. If anybody deserves your fear, it's him. Fear doesn't appertain to anybody else. If you're ever concerned because somebody puts a hex on you and, oh, you're a little scared, don't be a little scared. Don't even be a little bit scared. It means nothing. It means nothing. Fear appertains to God. That's why he tells you to fear him. Because if you don't fear him, just like if you don't love him, you're going to love something else. If you don't fear him, you're going to fear something else. If he doesn't have all your fear, then you're going to fear man, or the world, or your mother-in-law, or whatever. Verse 7, who would not fear thee, O King of nations? Who would not fear thee, O King of nations? For to thee doth it appertain, for as much as among all the wise men of the nations, and in all their kingdoms, there is none like unto thee. But they are altogether brutish and foolish. The stock is a doctrine of vanity. The stock being the idol. It's just the stock of a tree. It's a tree trunk that they've carved and plated. And now it stands as a totem pole. And it's all decorated and stuff. It's hauled around. Mary stands in her little bathtub in front of people's yard. It's just a stock. It may be made of plaster now or whatever, but it's a stock. Verse 8. The stock is a doctrine of vanities. It's just empty. It's all wind. Verse 9, silver spread into plates is brought up from Tarshish, comes a long way. Gold from Euphaz, comes a long way. The work of the workman, a lot of effort goes into it. And of the hands of the founder, blue and purple is their clothing, it's beautiful. They're all the work of cunning men. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God. And an everlasting king. At his wrath the earth shall tremble, and the nations shall not be able to abide his indignation. Thus shall ye say unto them, the gods that have not made the heavens and the earth, even they shall perish from the earth and from under these heavens. So those gods are created things. Those gods are, if anything, they're idols, Psalm says. And I have no question that sometimes spirits become involved with those idols. But as far as being anything beyond a creation, they're not anything. And they're going to die, be exterminated just like everything else. Verse 12, he that hath made the earth by his power, he hath established the world by his wisdom, hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. Now, I like that. He, the God, right, the God of the heavens, he hath made the earth by his power. Well, that's not a secret, but look at 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. What is his power? 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 24. But unto them which are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God. He made the earth by his power. Christ is the power of God. Jesus Christ made the heavens and the earth. You find that in Colossians chapter 1. But Jesus Christ made the heavens and the earth. Further, back to Jeremiah 10:12. He that hath made the earth by his power, he hath made the earth by his power. He hath established the world by his wisdom. So Christ is the power of God, unless I'm mistaken, and the wisdom of God. 1 Corinthians 1:24. So the Lord made everything by him. by his power, by his wisdom, and hath stretched out the heavens by his discretion. I don't find anywhere where Christ is called, quote-unquote, the discretion of God. But when Joseph was in Egypt, Pharaoh, after he prophesies about the 7 years of plenty and then famine and so on, and then has a plan for it, Pharaoh says, "There are none so discreet as thou art." And Jesus Christ is sitting there. Joseph is sitting there and winds up second on the throne, just like Jesus Christ. "There is none so discreet as thou art." Jesus Christ is the discretion of God. Any questions or comments? Yeah. Someone else had their hand. I forgot where it was. Corey? There's a spirit about places. I mean, I don't know. You know, you those of you that went down to Brother Brand's church down there, you know, he's holding church in an old Catholic church. We go in there, and you know, there's nothing spooky about that church at all. But I was in there once before they were in there. There's a little, you know, there's a spirit about places. I believe there are things in places. Anything else? Well, let's sing one more before we are dismissed here tonight. Remember, we'll try to have a picnic if for some reason the weather starts looking really bad and just doesn't look promising. I will email everybody, all right? So might be worthwhile to stay up with your email in case we decide to put it off for another week. Let's turn to number 8. Let's turn to number 84. Or 84. Blessings here. Folks will need your protection. You're to look over them. Father, we are aware of what's going on in our country right now, and these electioneers running around, Lord, looking for votes. We do pray for a sadly sick country father, a shadow of what it once was. Pray you'd help us to have the wisdom, the discretion to do the right thing, be the kind of light that we're supposed to be. And pray in Jesus' name. Amen.